Hello and welcome to another episode of this State of Sales Enablement. Today, I'm your host, Danny Mathers, and I am very excited to introduce my guest to you today. And the reason being is not only was he voted one to watch 2023, but he's been voted 24 one to watch as well. And that is purely down to his dedication to the community. And you might also notice this guest voice, as he does also have his own podcast that he hosts, which is called Enablement Evolved. So with all that beautiful intro to this most incredible man, I'm going to introduce to you Kieran Smith. Hello, Kieran.
Hi, Danny. I don't really know how I'm going to be able to live up to that billing. I'm not going to lie.
I like my game show host vibe, though. It's pretty good, isn't it?
It was great. The only thing missing was some form of jazz hands.
Hey, I've got that for the people at home that are watching. Here we go, jazz hands. Thank you, Kieran. Kieran, we've got a lot to discuss today. And I know with all of the accolades that I've seen on your LinkedIn profile, I'm going to assume that one of the areas that we want to talk about today is conversational intelligence, CI. But for those people that don't know you, tell us a little bit about you, Kieran. How did you land in sales enablement or revenue enablement?
It was a long and winding road, as most of us have been on when we get to the vintage that I am. So I've been into the sales sphere for probably 17, 18 years, despite what this moisturizer would tell you.
Couldn't tell.
I've been up since 4:45 this morning either, but I have. So after finishing playing football, that's what I used to do for the job. I was a professional football player. I moved into sales, was at IC for about 6 or 7 years, and then very quickly moved into sales leadership. Was in sales leadership for about a decade, 11 years. And then during the pandemic, I made the conscious decision to move over to enablement because I wouldn't really enjoy being a sales leader. And you and I have cathartically discussed it on many of conversations, Danny, but it sort of reached my limit, plus the glass ceiling that lots of people get to. And it wasn't really aligning with the passions that I had, which were around methodologies, process, developing people, stuff like that. And the tenure of sales leaders was getting shorter and shorter. So I was really struggling to make an impact. Moved over to enablement initially at Andela, where I joined as an individual contributor supporting AEs. Very quickly, I think it was after about 2.5 months, I got promoted to lead a mighty team of 4 enablers there that worked globally. Was there for about 2 years and then moved over to Staffbase. At Staffbase, I was a regional lead, leading a team of 7 that covered EMEA, APAC, global partner enablement, as well as the global responsibility for enablement, measurability and impact. So I probably had the longest job title of all time. And then, unfortunately, I left there as part of a riff in late December, early January. So I'm currently getting very good at hoovering, and I'm always on time to pick up the kids at the moment.
Long may that last. And Kieran, I'm really intrigued. I mean, I love everything about conversational intelligence. I feel that it's the goggles for enablement. It's the glasses. It gives us visibility. It shows a lot of areas that I guess typically without it would be a very manual process. So I am a huge advocate for CI. But tell me, why are you so passionate about it?
I think for all those reasons, plus a couple more. I think I, as a sales leader, come from the sort of old school version of, you know, the call recordings. First thing when someone was at desk side and you could hear what they were saying, to the point where we got as technologically advanced as being able to do that from your own computer and listen to recordings. And it was something I always enjoyed, and it was something that really made a difference to where I was developing my teams. So when I got to the point where I was as a budget holder, as a sales leader, conversation intelligence was one of the first things that I bought, and implemented. So we have the development side, but I'm going to steal this from Forrester, but I think they encapsulated it nicely. I think conversation intelligence raises the ceiling for enablement in terms of what we can do, how we can do it, how we can scale it. And I think, in my opinion, within enablement or even within sales, but I think conversation intelligence is still used in a pretty rudimentary way. And I'm like, the thing that excites me is how much more we can add to it and how many other things we can do besides just the listening to one call at a time or asking managers to coach. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. And I can just, I could unpick so much of that. And again, just because I see CI being deployed really well, and I see it being deployed and just kind of sat there listening in the background, utilized every now and then.
Yeah.
What do you, in your opinion, when we think about the challenges of a good implementation or deployment, what makes a great implementation, and what are the challenges for enablers that are due to go on that journey that they need to perhaps be mindful of?
I think the first thing is the understanding of why you're buying it or why you have it. And then I think whatever your understanding is that matched by everyone else? So what I mean by that is, quite often the companies will bring in conversation tells them because they want to coach. That's fine. But do you have a coaching culture?
Right.
That if you don't have a coaching culture, then actually you need to embed a coaching culture in order to use it. Or can you do those concurrently? Maybe, but it's really, really difficult, right? Puts a much heavier lift. And I would say that the vast majority of people still refer to the likes of Gong or Chorus or any of these as a coaching platform. And it's not. It's a conversation intelligence platform. So what's the prism of your worldview? Why are you looking at it like that? Now, if you've bought it for that reason, that's absolutely fine. But do your managers know that? Is that what your CRO expect? Because if not, you're really going to struggle with adoption. And I've made this mistake, and this is one of my favorite mistakes to own. Is the very first time I tried to roll it out at Andela, it fell flat on its face. Why? Because I made too many assumptions. And I assumed that everyone was invested as I was. When I say everyone, I mean the managers, because we were like, yeah, got a coach, created the scorecards, fantastic. But I didn't ask them, like, because I was a sales leader, as I mentioned, I enjoyed coaching. I saw the benefits of it, but I just assumed that they were the same. I assumed that they wanted to. I assumed that they knew why we were coaching. But more importantly, or the worst part of it was, I assumed that they knew how to coach. And you know better than I do, coaching is a massive skill, right? It's not just something that you pick up and run with one day. So I'm putting people, I'm a big fan of moving people out of their comfort zone to their stretch zone, but I moved everyone all the way to their stress zone. I was giving KPIs on day one, but I'd never shown them what to do and how to do it and why. Like, again, everyone knows what coaching is and why you should do it, but the how is often missed by us in enablement, right? We do the same for sales reps as well. So yeah, I think the first thing is understanding and alignment. If you don't have that, and that's not agreed in a common area by the group of people that matter, you're really going to struggle, right? You're really, really going to struggle. And then outside of that, whatever that reason for buying is, like, start with that. You can expand organically from there. It's really easy to do, but start with that and then build on top of it.
Yeah, that's a really good, even just kind of looking at those evaluation points. What is it that you're evaluating? How can you get everybody on board? And one thing that I've seen is, again, you can have leaders all involved and, okay, this is going to bring us this, this, and this. How do you overcome that challenge of getting reps wanting to adopt, wanting to, because they can very easily stop recordings?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, maybe I'm even answering my own question, I'm wondering whether, does that go back to something that you said perfectly before, in it's whether you've got a coaching culture to begin with. So if you don't have a coaching culture, is the adoption of a CI tool going to fall flat on his face? So what I'd be interested to hear what your views are on that.
I think there's two almost talk tracks or two streams on that for me. The first one is the coaching side. And I think before the reps, it's all about the managers, right? I think there's been times where I've had to sort of reverse engineer the coaching culture by getting the reps to tag the managers. But realistically, that's, in something, it's a much bigger lift than everyone thinks it is. It makes it even more difficult to do it that way. I had to essentially get that way because I ran out of ideas of how to get managers involved. But so I think it's all about the managers and how this is going to make a difference and stuff like that. I think on the other side, you can use it as conversation intelligence. And this is where I think it raises that ceiling. You don't have to use it as a compliance tool. And this is one of my big phrases, is conversation intelligence is not a compliance tool, but 99% of us use it as that. Right? We use it as an aftermath. If you look at that pyramid, you create a program from the OKR down to this, down to here, down to the behaviors, and then you only use it to see if they're doing what they're told. Cool, right? But that's one way of using it. And it's almost like that's that lagging indicator, right? How do you know what you're telling them actually makes an impact? And I think this is the difference. That's where you go on the other stream. Can you use the intelligence that you have through the data, through listening to calls, through whatever it is, to understand what matters? And again, it can change the way that we teach, right? So we can go, right, this is the teaching. We're teaching you we're teaching you this. Why? Because we know that this makes a difference in this stage, and now we want you to do it. And again, it just takes you through that sort of learning theory of, okay, why are we doing this? Right? So yeah. If I understand that in discovery calls, without even speaking to any leaders, without doing any coaching, right, if I can come If I can look at the conversion rate, this is with RevOps, I can look at the conversion rate from disco stage to demo stage, and I can see that it's quite low, or it's coming down the way. And I go and choose me, and I don't have to listen to millions of calls. And I think that's, I did listen to thousands of calls in my first year. I did.
Tell us how many, Kieran, I've seen it.
2,238 individually. But I'll never financially recover from it. But you can do that, but you don't have to do that. So you can use the data. So I could go in and look at that conversion rate. But actually, if we just, again, sales velocity, whatever, if we pull this lever, we get this conversion rate a little bit better. Okay, so what things do we feel are important in this stage? Pain, impact, whatever it is, you know, the implication is the big one. So I can go in and go like, well, actually, in this stage, we're only implicating pain in 12% of the cases. But I know based on this other thing, if we do get a good implication, our win rate is 10, 15, 20, 30% higher. So that makes it really worthwhile us training that. So that when I go to the sales leader, whether that be CRO or the VP or individual managers, say, I think we should work on this because of that. And this will impact your team to the overall win rate of X. But if we have that much data, now it becomes a no-brainer. Rather than you go, oh, we're going to coach on this. And then when you go into the sessions with the actual reps, you can be like, we're going to work on this because of that. What that means for you is this. And again, you just take them through that. And then again, you've got the telling them what it is, showing them what to do. And then you've got the compliance, right? But if you go compliance first, what are you complying to? They said A instead of I. Well, like, who cares? But if you show them what's impactful, then you're a difference maker. And that's what I'm saying, is you don't always need to start with coaching first. And coaching, my analogy for using conversation intelligence as a coaching platform is like, you know, you had those hyper-growth companies and they needed another 10 million ARR, but it would hire 10 reps and give them $1 million ARR target and it would never work out. That's what I think it's like to buy Gong or any other conversation intelligence platform and just expect it to implement a coaching coach. Mm-hmm. It's a platform. It's not a coaching culture, right? You have to work at that.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I feel like you've been living in my life for a number of months. You've just summarized it all beautifully. And that really, just even hearing you talk about a few of these different pillars, when now enablement, I'm not even saying now, this has been the case for a long time now, but I think the focus and the attention is even more so on this in terms of making enablement more data centric.
Yeah.
And what you've just described then, and I'd love you to expand on it, is using the data to make enablement more strategic.
Yeah. Well, I think to give you a real life example of what I just mentioned, one of the places I worked for, we're looking at, we used the SPICE methodology, Winning by Design, and we're looking at what mattered. And when we got to the sort of demo stage, so we were actually okay at getting the situation pain, less of the impact, but I think everyone struggles with that, on 99% of businesses. But what we were looking at in terms of the adoption of the overall methodology is we found that a critical event was sitting at 17% of calls or opportunities, which is not good. So we had a look at that and we said, well, actually, again, it was sitting at 17%. We looked at it and looked at that data and we realized that if an opportunity at this stage had critical event mentioned and documented, that the win rate was 14% higher. Right. So immediately, we've got to work on this, right? Because our conversion from that to the next stage was dropping, or it was getting elongated, which means a lot of them were probably fake at that point. It was just getting ghosted. So we looked at that. So then what do? We walked backwards from there to create a program. So again, it's all about behaviors. It's not just about a one-off. It's about behaviors, right? And it's about a series, and we did it in a programmatic fashion. So again, we did three sessions, but rather than enablement leading it, we had a VP there who was a SME and he got a compelling event, critical event, same difference. But that's somebody he massively believed in. So he led the session, right? So again, what we did was what is a critical event? How to uncover a critical event? How to create a critical event? So, right. So we looked at all different elements because we had some people, there isn't always a critical event. Well, there is, right? Now it could just be the end of the year. It could just be the end of budget season, but there's always something. I think something critical event can throw people off with the severity of it, right? But what we did is we ran these sessions. We broke it down. So we had what is it? Why is it important? How do you do it? Breakout rooms, practice, practice, practice. We did that for the different behaviors. At the end of each session, we had homework task where reps had to tag their manager. This was AEs only, sorry, had to tag their manager in an example of them discussing critical event. The manager had to give feedback. Within 6 weeks, we've gone from an average of 17% of being mentioned, 49%. So again, a fantastic, 49% still not fantastic. However, if you look at percentage growth over the course of 5-6 weeks, we really made a difference there, right? And the thing is, our sales cycle was between 6 and 9 months. So we weren't going to improve win rate straight away. We were improving was stage to stage. What we were improving was adoption. So now we can look at compliance.
Like, yeah.
We've told them what it is, why we're doing it, how to do it, get your manager involved, and then we're seeing a massive shift from there. And again, we can pull these levers in any of these things, but it starts with one data point that has to be confirmed by another one, which has to be led on to, okay, so what behaviors are in there? So it's a lot more, and I can do all that before I have to get to the coaching bit, right? I can do all of that on my own and then sense check it with other people and then go in and actually anecdotally listen to some calls, right? And even when it has critical event from those 17, some of them were a bit spurious, right? So I knew that even the 17 was probably blatant. So, and then from there you can set up trackers and all these things and you can share best practice. So then your coaching culture starts to organically grow from there. But that's like an example of using that data to drive sort of strategic enablement and an actual, that's like, I suppose it's a bit of a start to stand on when you can move it with that in 5-6 weeks.
Absolutely. I love that example just because it covers so many different components of why enablement is so important. And I guess it, without that, without looking at that data to that granular level and looking at it, it is about behavior change, but it's, well, how do you measure that behavior change and what are you putting in place? What initiatives are you putting in place to then really change that? Yeah. And I think what you've just described really encapsulates the importance of getting enablement right and using the right data metrics to achieve those outcomes of an increased conversion rate.
Yes.
Just being able to have that the ability to track back from that one first, from that root cause, to be able to track back, I think is, that's such a great example.
And I think just to add on that as well, to zoom out a little bit further, that was like something that was like almost like a directive from senior leadership, right? In terms of the conversion rate. And then from there, it went down to, okay, in which buying stage is this happening? And then we had to link that to, because we wanted that common language of the methodology, right? So we wanted, so it goes all the way from that macro and cascades or waterfalls all the way down to this behaviors level. And yes, it's tough. Sometimes it's difficult to really zoom out from there. But again, you can start in the middle and zoom out, but then also zoom in at the same time. You just need to start, right? It's like, I've set this challenge to other enablers that I work with or mentor, and like, go into the data. As an exercise yourself, pick out something, come up with a sort of a thesis on it. A thesis, that's too much. A theory on it.
Go with thesis.
Yeah. Come up with a synopsis on why you think this data point is important and how would you create a program to change it. Like, you don't have to take it to someone. You should create that and go and sense check it. But again, from the middle, you can go and justify how do we put it into everything else that we do. But it's easy, in my opinion, for enablers, it's easier to get that and then create the programs.
But yeah.
That's you really like using conversation intelligence, using data, and actually being strategic about it rather than going, let's do another objection handling session. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think just bringing those examples to life, I think it's, again, it's when you say about enablers taking that initiative, there will always be problems in the sales cycle.
Always.
If you are thinking outside the box and you're looking at a problem, rather than, I guess, enablers can feel quite overwhelmed because there are so many problems that you're trying to fix when you look at the sales velocity levers, but you don't have to fix it all. You can just focus on one. Zone your focus in on one of those levers that you want to have impact in and you want to come up with an initiative for, and then watch the results unfold.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, even with data, then I think this is when you get really comfortable with it, right? Because lots of people are really hung up on an overall win rate, right? Which is fine, I get it. We need to win deals. Then sometimes you've got other bits of data that counterbalance that. Like if your win rate goes from 20 to 25%, but your average order value drops because you've got discount parameters, you've actually not made more money, right? So, but again, if you can have the facility to go and look at that, because lots of people, our win rate's going up, what's going on? I say, but then from that point, you know where to work. Again, is it discounting? Is it just overall? So, the data, I think I was on a webinar I did with Eper Enable, and it's, data is king, but context is God, right? I think you really need to, you need to have both of those, right? And I think that's why data standalone can tell you anything, or it can tell you nothing. So you've got to go in and get comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. And again, like going back to the use cases when you're even using CI, going back to context is God, is if you look at whether it's your CRM and rep to say, if you're looking at the loss analysis, product is due to product, it's due to product. And you could take that as, okay, we've got problems with product. Maybe we don't have problems with our internal skills and competencies. But then when you start breaking it down and you're looking at CI, and then you're, like you mentioned, critical event wasn't mentioned in half of these calls.
Yeah.
When you start looking at the actual behavior attributes, you can then look at, okay, we've got more context now. We've got context to showcase. It's not just this. It's because this, this, and this was missing. And I guess even, you know, I know you speak a lot about RevOps being your best friend.
Yeah.
I think if you have that, if you build that mechanism where you've got RevOps feeding you the data that you need to make you more efficient in your decision-making, it's all about how you be more efficient and save time. And that absolutely saves you so much time if you have that great relationship with RevOps.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I was going to, a few things that we mentioned today, talking about not necessarily just the coaching element, we've mentioned leaders, sales managers, CS managers in that case as well. Where do you think enablement starts, finishes, and then hands the baton over to, when it comes to just CI in general, what role do you think sales leaders need to play in that overall strategy?
I think if we're talking about, I think it starts with them. Like genuinely, I mean, if you want to pass the, if you just want to use it as like an intelligence tool, it's probably a very expensive way to do that, right? So I think you need to start with them, and it sort of finishes with them, right? Because the thing is that if you want to build a coaching culture, you need to get them on board early. And I've done this in a variety of different ways where maybe they weren't overly interested in listening to calls, but they like to deal with boards, or they like some element of, or they should go in and look at the questions rather than listen to the whole call. Perfect. I think you need to meet them where they're at, right? And again, this is a pretty common thing within enablement, but if you can find a champion, you know, someone who, like I had to do that a few times where someone was maybe using a new feature, so we wanted everyone else to use it, so we got them to run the session and tell, you know, like these are all sort of common practices that we have, but it's no different. And as I say, I think it almost starts and ends with them, because even after the enablement session, realistically, we're not the ones that are going to go in and sort of make sure they're complying with it. Yeah, we'll look at the data, we'll go micro, but then we have to zoom back out because we have to move on to the next thing. And then we might just report on it. We might have trackers, we might have this. So I think you've really got to get them bought in. I'm a big fan of KPI. Like, you and I are cut from a similar cloth in understanding how important and how sort of force multiplying coaching is. I think if you can try and get that across to managers, like I've had to break it down when I'm giving managers KPIs for coaching, like time blocks 3 hours a week, score a minimum of one call per rep per week, try and have a group coaching session, try and have a 30-minute session every 2 weeks. And I'm breaking it down and like that's like 14% of your week. And if you're telling me you don't have time, you don't have 14% of your week to develop your people, you're in the wrong job.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a very obtuse way of putting it, but sometimes you've got to put it black and white and be like, listen, this is actually 14% of your week. I'm not making it up. Like, look at it to yourself. Honestly, I've had people who have 3 reps on a team tell me you don't have time to call or don't listen to calls. I'm like, come on. Like, I have 400 projects plus you come to move stuff and I still manage to listen to calls. So I don't believe you.
Yeah.
But again, it's if you push people, they'll push you back. So again, you've got to bait a hook to shoot the fish. And realistically, a lot of that will come from whether it's VP or CRO level in terms of I think by far, frontline manager is the most difficult job in sales, by far. I know lots of people who might say SDR or whatever. I don't think it is. I think it's the frontline manager. And I think, and Aaron Evans touched on this when I spoke to him last year, normally it starts because the expectations between a sales manager and their boss are totally out of line. And their boss don't understand what their managers do all day. I think he said he runs, when he first worked with a company, he runs and he asked a manager to come, a VP or whomever, to write down all the things they expect from their manager. The managers come in and write it on another board and we compare them and utterly different. We're going to start there, right? And ask your CRO how, and I did this at Staff Base. I went to the CRO and said, lots of CROs tell me, probably a very dangerous conversation to have for the first time. Lots of CROs tell me that managers are responsible for culture, but I want you to be honest with me. Do you think it's enablement or do you think it's managers? And he said, it's managers. My managers are capped at a maximum of 8 people in the team. If I didn't want them coaching, they'd have 20 people in the team. That's the only soundbite I need. I'm going to take that and run with it.
Yeah.
It wasn't as easy as rolling it out after that. However, that was the sort of foundation that everything else was built on, because then I could point back and say, Dan said, this is what it is. And in the leadership meetings, he was a big supporter for that. Still didn't make it easy, but it's a good start.
And that, I think that really boils down to, we look at some of the foundational questions that I hear people in the enablement community ask on a regular basis, is about that enablement buy-in. Whereas if you've got CRO, CSO, who is so bought in,
yep.
Even in terms of, okay, I'm going to set these KPIs for sales managers to coach. Yep. It's, okay, you do that. You do what you need to do, because I believe that that's the nucleus. That's the center of where all the, you know, all the great stuff happens in terms of insights and data. Well, Kieran, this has been incredibly insightful. Thank you for some really useful examples. And I'm sure you've probably given people so much to think about after hearing that. So thank you so much. Where can people find you if they want to reach out to you?
LinkedIn, probably. And I quite often, or I always forget that I have my own podcast. So I'm glad that you mentioned it earlier, because I never mentioned it. But yes, I have lots of people reach out to me about conversation intelligence. It's a huge passion of mine, as is the development of the enabling profession. And I think this is a good way to do both at the same time. So yeah, reach out on LinkedIn if you want to listen to my podcast about enablement of all. It was a pleasure as always, Danny.
Thank you so much, Kieran. And that wraps up another episode of the State of Sales Enablement.